So good evening everyone and welcome again. I hope you're enjoying this beautiful weather we're having. I got here a bit early, as I do, and just to be outside in the garden, it was extraordinary, you know. So we will be speaking tonight about discussing compassion, the second of these qualities of the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes. And I think, yeah, I'm going to take a few minutes to have some questions. So please, Linda, go ahead.
I'm wondering, who is the intended recipient? Is it the person that is speaking meditation when you're sending compassion? Is there a hope that the person is recipient?
So the question is, it who is benefiting, who is the beneficiary of the, or who is it intended for? So the question is the compassion intended for yourself as the giver, or for another? With the compassion, what we're doing is we're opening our hearts. It's really, one way of saying it is, it's loving kindness meeting suffering. So it's the qualities that we've been cultivating over the recent weeks. The particular expression that this love, this caring, takes when it meets suffering. So we see suffering, we see somebody suffering. So it really has two parts to it. One is that opening of our own heart, kind of connecting with our care for this other person and their suffering. And it's also the wish to take action. I don't mean that in a sense that we're somehow going to solve the problem, but it's the taking action is really the caring for them, the wishing well for them. Obviously, if there's anything we can do, that we would do it. But it's not dependent on being able to kind of do anything in the resolution kind of sense, or, you know, have a particular result. But it is reaching out to them. It is sending our love, our care to them. So it certainly is intended for their benefit and their well-being. But it's certainly also our own well-being. And in a sense, what happens is that there's a falling away of the sense of the separation between ourselves and others. You know, when the separation is present, then there's a contraction. And it's very hard to feel that connection. But when the separation falls away, then there's that opening, that flow of caring. So it really is, I mean, it really is both, you know, both connecting with each other, so that there really isn't a separation between the two. That it's the loving heart going out to meet the suffering, to care for the suffering. Does that...
What about when it's for others in the world that you don't know?
Again, what is it? What if it's for others in the world that you don't know or you don't see? If there's not a sense that we're having to resolve anything, it's really no different if it's the person right here in front of us or the person in Sudan or Tibet or wherever it might be. It's the heart opening up in the same way as with loving kindness, that the heart opens and connects with all beings without conditions and without separation. So it's the same, the heart opening, reaching out to touch the suffering of people near and far. So there isn't, you know, there isn't a kind of like a difference between, oh, this person is here, they're in my family, or they're my friend. as opposed to somebody who is a long way away, who we don't have a personal connection with. The compassion can, you know, will be expressed. The heart will be open in the same way. So see how it is to, you know, to let the heart be open in that way. I mean, more than anything, it's a practice of cultivating the open, the loving heart.
I find it fairly easy to kind of cultivate loving kindness towards the suffering of people I don't know. And then when I think about people closer to me, it becomes more of like the line from kind of loving kindness to sorrow and like a grief comes more kind of a suffering. So I'm wondering if you can speak more to that kind of work in the world.
So for you, it feels easier when people are more distant. You can relate to their suffering and your heart can be open to them. But when it's somebody closer to you, you feel there's more of a sense of a contraction, a tightening up in that situation. And it's harder to open to compassion, to connect with the heart opening in that situation. Yeah, so when it's somebody closer, it gets kind of more contracted, wanting to change the situation. So there, what's happening is that that we're closing down. It's harder for us to be open in those situations. In that, you know, in your example. The more that we're able to open to our own pain and our own suffering, the more then we're able to open to the suffering of others. And I'll be talking about that this evening as a really kind of central theme of the practice of compassion. It's not surprising that where it's closer to us, either with ourselves, which is often the case, we close down, or there's more difficulties, or there's more judgment or criticism, or somebody that we're close to, a partner or a family member or a close friend, where, you know, we know where their buttons are and they know where our buttons are. So it's easy to get kind of caught in those places of tightening up and contraction. So it's quite understandable that compassion can be, the heart closes down, can easily close down in those situations. So what's important really is to cultivate, allow ourselves to open to what's tight and contracted in ourselves, you know, to feel that tightness, feel the fear perhaps that's there, or the worry, or some other difficult mind state, and really allow ourselves to open to it, and practice, you know, reaching out and touching, perhaps in a very gentle way, into you know, those areas of difficulty. Where does it feel shut down, and how does it feel shut down? So it's not unusual, and it's not surprising for it to be more difficult in those close-in situations. But those are places where we can really pay attention, where we can bring this quality of compassion, and particularly pay attention to what is tight and what feels closed within ourselves. Kind of. Because the more, and I'll be speaking about that this evening, but the more we can let our own hearts be open to our own places of suffering and difficulty, the more we can open to the suffering and the sorrow of others. So, there's not the expectation that, you know, when when somebody is experiencing pain or suffering, that somehow we're going to be rising above it, or we're going to be kind of able to just very easily, you know, oh, this is just what happens in life. Our hearts open and we will feel that pain. And compassion really allows us to connect with that, to open fully to it, to at a deepest level, really, to acknowledge that this is life, and this is what life brings. That the quality of equanimity, of being able to hold the joys and the sorrows of life with a peaceful heart. That's really, it's not something that kind of happens immediately or happens easily, but that's really the quality that we're cultivating. And we will feel the pain when somebody close to us is suffering, inevitably. But the more we can allow our hearts to be open, the more we can support them, the more we can care about them. And compassion allows that to be to be loving and caring without falling into, on one hand, grief, being overwhelmed. You know, and it may be for a while we are overwhelmed. Maybe for a while we are kind of knocked over by it. But compassion allows us to hold that the pain without it being kind of overwhelming to us. It allows us to stay in balance and in connection and not separate. Because where compassion, you know, if there isn't, if we're closed ourselves, then what our response to suffering will be either to be overwhelmed, or it will be to separate ourselves from the suffering. To be, oh, you, this poor person over here, and I'm over here. Kind of to distance ourselves from it. And compassion allows us to really break down that sense of separation, that sense of distance, and to realize that all of us will experience loss. We'll all get sick, we'll all get old, we'll all die. And to hold that with an open and a caring heart, that we're not different from each other, where there's a, you know, the Dalai Lama talked about a sameness to all of us. There's a commonality that we share in being, you know, in being humans, in being sentient beings. And that allows us, that understanding allows us to realize, you know, to really touch into the suffering of another, so that even if somebody is across the world, it's not a sense of, oh, I'm over here and I'm privileged or wealthy or whatever, or, you know, I have these things and this person is poor and living in, you know, in a violent situation. When the heart is open, there's really no separation between us, and then it calls us into action. And that action may take a variety of forms. I mean, maybe to engage in, you know, social action. You know, that's an important piece of how compassion gets expressed in the world. There may be many different expressions. Doesn't always lead to social action in those kind of cases. But it leads to the heart opening and to wanting to ease the suffering or to end the suffering of another, which is kind of a core element of this, of compassion. So let me talk, continue with the discussion of the Brahma Viharas. We've spoken the last couple of weeks about loving kindness, which is really an unconditional love. A kindness, a friendliness, a love that doesn't discriminate, that it's not limited to certain people, and it's not limited by clinging or attachment or holding. And that I spoke about how it's a natural quality of heart that arises when we let go of clinging, when we let go of kind of the narrow holding or aversion, that what naturally arises in the heart is loving kindness. It's a natural, kind of a natural outflow, a natural response of the heart to not non-clinging, non-attachment. And it is also a quality that we can cultivate. I spoke last week, I mentioned the Buddha said to the bhikkhus, the monks, he said, whatever one frequently thinks about and ponders on, that will become the inclination of mind. Whatever one thinks about and thinks on and ponders, that will become the inclination of the mind. So if we, you know, if we respond angrily to certain situations that come up in our lives, and that becomes the kind of the way we think about things, you know, we think about the world being like this and nobody's fair to me, or, you know, it's all a setup and somehow I'm, you know, nothing's going to work out for me. If I incline my mind in that direction, that becomes the inclination of my mind. If I cultivate anger, then that becomes the quality of my mind. If I cultivate feeling sorry for myself, then that becomes like, it becomes the kind of meta story, you know, M-E-T-A story, the kind of big story or belief that governs the way I live in the world, if that's how I incline my mind. In the same way, or the other side, if I incline my mind towards kindness and love, that becomes the quality of heart, the quality of mind. And so, you know, how has it been for you to practice loving kindness over these weeks? Have you noticed anything that has shifted in you, you know, in practicing, you know, on a regular basis? You know, I was sharing with some folks yesterday that just in the teaching of this class over the recent weeks, I find these qualities much more available to me than they have been in other times. You know, because I'm inclining my mind in the direction of loving kindness. I'm practicing, I'm reflecting on compassion and loving kindness and joy. And they're kind of more in the field of consciousness, in the field of awareness. And, you know, I find that a beautiful quality and a very inspiring thing that, yeah, if we incline our minds in this direction, in the direction of these qualities, that's how our lives will be. We will become more compassionate by cultivating compassion. We will be inclined towards actions of kindness, you know, as opposed to kind of shutting things out, you know, not looking towards them. So so this, in, with compassion, we're inclining our minds, we're not looking away from suffering. We're choosing not to look away from suffering, which is something that we can easily do. We can look away. So compassion, the word in Pali is karuna, K-A-R-U-N-A, is the quality of heart that arises when love meets the suffering of others or oneself. So when love, when the heart is open and it meets suffering, then the natural response, the natural quality that arises is compassion. It's been called the natural quivering of the heart in response to suffering, the natural quivering of the heart in response to suffering, or the trembling of the heart in response to suffering. It's a kind of a resonance that happens when we see when we experience suffering in others and in ourselves. And at the broadest level, it's the sincere wish for all beings to be free from suffering. So compassion is the willingness to be with suffering without running away, without turning away. There's a natural tendency to recoil from pain. You know, the way we, You know, if something, you know, if we're hurt, then we tend to pull back. If there's emotional pain, we tend to pull away from it. And if our heart isn't open, if we're in a place of fear or of separation, we tend to move away. We kind of go into that recoiling, contracting. So we can turn away from the homeless person that we see on the street. If we're in that place of, if we're in a place of fear or a place of contraction within ourselves, there's not going to be the space to reach out to that person. It's as though we're going to feel, you know, I only have so much space in my heart, and if I let this person in, it'll be too much for me. Or we could turn the TV off, you know, when the news from around the world comes on about Syria or Sudan or, you know, Tibet or wherever it might be. It can feel like it's too much to hold. It can feel overwhelming. And we can feel powerless. You know, what can I do here? So we turn away. So that's it's a natural response. It's a natural response. It's a kind of a habitual response or a conditioned response when we're in a place of fear to close down, to not let things in, to not let the suffering in. So when we're fearful, when we're in a state of contraction, we will tend to separate ourselves in this way. A personal story I remember well from about 7 or 8 years ago. I separated from the person I was living with for almost 20 years. In that year, it was 2005. And, you know, as people who've, probably many of us have been through some such, you know, similar situations of either loss or separation, it wasn't the easiest of times. You know, it was, there was a lot to work through and a lot of emotional pain and loss and some loneliness and all of those things. And I remember it happened maybe about 6 months after the actual separation where I went through probably the hardest time I went through in that period of after that. I think what happened was, you know, I got into a period of a lot of busyness and a lot of, you know, things that were being asked of me to do. And I hadn't really worked through a lot of the emotional things that were there. So there were the emotions, and then there were these demands coming in from the world. And it felt there was a very, very difficult time for me. It was the hardest time in that period. And then Katrina happened, you know, and right in the middle of that time. And I watched that and looked at it, and I felt it was like it was overwhelming to me. It was like I didn't have the space in my heart to hold that. It was felt overwhelming. My heart wanted to reach out to the suffering that was so much there, and we were seeing it so much in front of us all the time, and the sense of both of the sadness and the connection with people, the sorrow for the suffering that people were experiencing, plus the, you know, some anger around the lack of response. All of those things were coming up. But they were happening to me at a time when I didn't feel I had any space there for it. And I remember somebody, you know, asked me to take on a big, you know, fairly, well, at the time seemed like a big role in responding to Katrina, you know, and what we would do, you know, in response to that. And it felt like it felt overwhelming. You know, I didn't feel like I had the space within me to do that because I was in this place of real contraction. You know, a lot of my own personal pain I hadn't really fully processed it. So I just didn't have the bandwidth at the time really to go, you know, much as I wanted to, and I'd been an activist for decades, and, you know, so it was natural for me to do the reaching out. But I didn't have the space within myself to do that. And I also didn't have I didn't have quite the wisdom to be able to say no either. So looking back, that was another kind of lesson that, you know, if I'd have, you know, it was kind of a mixture of kind of guilt and wanting to do things, but, you know, and not really being able to, you know, have the kind of the clarity to say, I just can't do it right now. So I tried to do it and kind of did it not very well. You know, in retrospect, I felt that, you know, the response. Because it was coming from this very, very tight place, you know. And so so it's really important that we take care of ourselves, that we allow, that we bring compassion to our own experience, that would allow ourselves to be open to the suffering of others. Because if we're not, if we don't do that, then it's coming from another place. It's not coming really from a place of compassion. I wasn't able to act from a place of compassion because I wasn't opening enough with compassion to my own experience at that time. And so there was nothing, you know, there's very little there to give in terms of compassion, much as there might be the wish to do so. There wasn't really the capacity at that time to do so. And it was, you know, there's been a lot of learning for me through that, of seeing how we have to take care of ourselves, that we have to bring compassion to our own experience if we are going to be able to bring it into the world. And I'll talk some about that in a minute. Compassion comes really from the recognition that we're not separate. So when we're in a place of separation, we don't recognize that. There's not a real recognition of that. It's a recognition that to turn away from the suffering of others is really to turn away from ourselves, to shut ourselves down, to cut ourselves off from life, from joy. So I said that it's a natural response to recoil in the face of suffering. But perhaps at a deeper level, there's a natural empathy that we have that's within us. You know, you could say that's really within our DNA. Our species has survived through developing empathy, through cultivating not caring just for ourselves, and not even just for a few people around us, but for that circle of empathy, of caring, to be much wider. We see this innate empathy in our growing understanding of mirror neurons. Probably heard of the neurons that fire in the brain. In the same way, when we're experiencing something ourselves, as when we see somebody else experiencing it. So if I see you kind of walk into a wall and bang your head, it's as though it's happened to, you know, we don't actually feel the physical pain, but we recoil in the same way. We've evolved in relationship to each other to feel each other's pain. You know, it's not just Bill Clinton. You know, I feel your pain. You know, we really do feel each other's pain. We really, that connection with each other is a natural connection that we've developed, that we've evolved over our evolution. There's a really very interesting recent study suggests that this tendency to empathy goes way back in our evolution, you know, way back before, you know, even being primates. And this was a study that came out last year, a study of rats and empathy in rats. You may have heard of this study. And it showed, in scientific jargon, it showed empathically motivated pro-social behavior. empathically motivated pro-social behavior. Another way of saying this is that rats cared about other rats, not just their own children, but other rats that they didn't even know, you know, didn't even have any connection with. It's a fascinating study that they put two rats in a container, and one was free to roam about, and the other was confined in a plastic tube. And the tube could only be opened from the outside. And this is what the free rats did, again and again, seemingly in response to the distress of their companions, they learned to open this door to let the trapped rat out. It was a very interesting study, and I'll quote you a little bit from it. Once rats learned to free their trapped and agitated partners, they did so almost immediately in trial after trial. The behavior was clearly deliberate. When the restrainer was empty, rats ignored it, so they didn't open it just if no one was in there, no other rat was in there. When they put stuffed rats inside, they didn't open the container. Rats are no fools. The rats ignored the stuffed rats. One scientist said, it's compelling evidence that it's the distress of the trapped cage mate that's motivating this helping behavior. So they're responding to the distress of their fellow rat. And then they did some further tests to make sure the rats weren't responding to some immediate social reward. They say here, a rat version of a thank you hug. You know, they weren't, you know, how we might, you know, free somebody and get a hug, and that might be our payoff for freeing them. So you could say, well, we're really doing it for the hug rather than out of compassion. What they did with the rats was they tweaked the apparatus so that the trapped rats were released into a separate cage. So they didn't get the hug, you know, they were released, but into a separate place. But still the rats freed each other. So they freed each other even when it wasn't, you know, it wasn't because they were going to get together and do a high five or, you know, a hug or whatever. And then perhaps even more interesting thing, when given the opportunity to eat chocolate treats first, rats were as likely to release their companions first and even shared the chocolate with them. So the rats, they could have just taken the chocolate and eaten it all up and then said, okay, I'll free the other rats. They were just as likely to free the rats and then share the chocolate with them. One of the most interesting things I found really interesting in this study was there were five little pieces of chocolate, rat-sized chocolate, and the free rats would share 1.5 pieces of chocolate with the one that had been freed. I find that interesting how rats have this sense of, okay, I'll give you 1.5 of these pieces of chocolate, a kind of empathy, but a kind of a certain amount of, not half, 32%. For the mathematicians as well, maybe. So the well-known scientist, Franz de Waal, said, empathy is a truly powerful motivator on a par with the desire for chocolate. On a par with the desire for chocolate. He said that the results show for the first time that rodents are not just affected by the emotions of others, but that empathy motivates altruism. He believes that rats responded to an instinctive urge to make their compatriots feel better, just as humans and chimpanzees and some cetaceans do. The mechanism must be ancient, he said. So it seems that this caring goes deep and way back in us. So compassion, the literal meaning of compassion is suffering with. We suffer with another. And in order to suffer with another, in order for us to genuinely open to the suffering of another, we must first be willing to be with and open to our own suffering. And opening to our own suffering is really at the core of the Buddha's teachings. It's really at the core of the Four Noble Truths, which are about suffering. When we're willing to acknowledge our suffering, to say, yes, this is suffering. I'm feeling, I'm experiencing suffering. This is the first noble truth, acknowledging the existence of suffering, acknowledging our suffering, acknowledging the contraction that we're feeling, somehow we're wanting this moment to be different than it is, acknowledging this is what's here right now. Another small anecdote, I taught a class on Saturday with my partner, and we teach mindfulness-based stress reduction. I have to be careful that I have to, since this is being recorded, how much information to share. It was a lovely class, and it went really well, and, talking about how mindfulness can help us work with stress in our lives. And soon after that, when we got home, we were working on something that I needed to send out. And I experienced a situation where, she was working on it and making improvements to it. And I was getting more and more contracted about this. I was getting into a tighter and tighter place. And there was enough awareness to see that, I was in this place of real contraction, but there was so much energy that was habitual. It was very hard to act in a mindful or a compassionate way. It was really hard to kind of say, when she said, "I see you're being really reactive." That didn't help me be less reactive. I would say, well, so I responded in a reactive way, and then I said, oh, but you're being reactive in response to my reactivity. And so it was, so that's, that experience of being in that really tight place was suffering. And I was aware of the suffering, but at the time, not enough. The energy was so strong. It really took a stepping back from that. And fortunately, we're both able to kind of say, okay, let's take a breather here. And then within 5 or 10 minutes, everything was okay. We had a process where we'd worked this out. But it was very interesting just to go into that place of really of tightness, and also just be aware that, at that moment, there wasn't enough wisdom and insight to be able to just say, okay, let's pause here. There was the energy of wanting to be right was really strong, and kind of like, and then, wanting to be right, and then the other person, of course, will tend to want to be right as well, and then, get into this thing. So enough awareness to be able to kind of step back in time, but really taking time to do that, not not being so available. So the first noble truth, the experience of suffering, the second noble truth, the awareness that the suffering comes from clinging. In that situation, I was clinging to, I wanted it to be a certain way, and it wasn't going the way I wanted it to go. I wanted a different scenario. And yet, so that's the second noble truth, the truth of the origin of suffering, the cause of suffering being clinging. And in that situation, even while I was in the middle of it, I was aware that I was clinging. I knew that that was happening. But it took a while to be able to let go of that, which is the third noble truth, is There's an end to suffering when we can let go of the clinging, when we can see that, okay, this is just phenomena coming and going. This is just energy. This is a strong emotion that's present. And if I can watch that, see it come and go, then it can pass. So the third noble truth being the end of suffering, that if we can be with our suffering, then we can, if we can fully open to it, then that is the pathway out of suffering. As Ajahn Chah, the great Thai teacher, said that two kinds of suffering, the suffering that leads to more suffering when we think getting the thing we want will end our suffering, but it actually leads to more suffering. But the second kind of suffering being when we're really willing to open to our suffering, and then the opening to it is in fact the way out. It's kind of the pathway out of suffering. So it's really important that we open to our own pain, our own suffering, if we are to open to the pain, the sorrow, the suffering of others. When we can open to our own suffering, then the heart naturally opens in the face of another's suffering. It's what we naturally want to do. It's a natural movement of the heart. Just as those rats, you know, they wanted to ease the suffering, the distress of their compatriots, of their fellow rats. They didn't have the cognitive apparatus that we do, but on a very basic level, they didn't want the other rats to suffer. But when we've had to shut down our own heart, our own feelings, to defend ourselves from our own pain, then our capacity to open to the suffering of another or others is affected. So when we don't or we can't open to our own pain, to our own hurt, our own suffering, then our response to the pain and suffering of another will be limited. There will be necessarily be a distancing of ourselves from others suffering from their pain and their sorrow. Then it's much more likely that that the way we respond will be through our feelings will manifest as pity. You know, there'll be a separation. We'll see, yes, we care about that suffering, but there's a distancing, a separation, a sense of I'm here and you're down here. There's not a real feeling of the suffering of another. There's a gap. And then that's what's called a near enemy of compassion. Pity is a near enemy. It looks like it kind of masquerades as compassion, but it isn't actual compassion because our heart isn't opening fully. And there's this sense of quality of separation. With compassion, there's not separation between ourselves and others. It's been said that when love meets suffering, the expression is compassion. When love meets suffering, the expression of that is compassion. When fear meets suffering, the expression of that is pity. When our heart is closed, when we're feeling fearful, then we're not capable, we're not able to open to the suffering of another or others. And it gets expressed as pity, or it could get expressed as being overwhelmed, kind of overwhelming grief. When we open fully to our own experience, the sense of a separate self falls away, and the barrier between myself and my pain and another and their pain dissolves. And this opening with compassion and love to our own experience, to our own suffering, is a gateway to opening to the suffering of another or others. There's a great Tibetan teacher, Milarepa. He said, "Long accustomed to contemplating compassion, I have forgotten all difference between myself and others. Long accustomed to contemplating compassion, I have forgotten all difference between myself and others. So in that cultivation of compassion, then the distance between self and other, in his case, he says, falls away. So that there's just a not a separation at all. The path from opening to our own suffering to opening to the suffering of the world leads through the gateway of our own suffering and meeting that suffering with compassion. So it's really important that we begin with ourselves, or that we include ourselves in the circle of compassion. Otherwise, it won't, compassion, that caring for others, won't be available to us. It'll manifest in more distorted ways. So this practice is like alchemy. It's like turning base metals into gold, or turning manure into flowers or vegetables. You know, we take the base materials, we take our suffering, and we meet it with kindness and love and without resistance. And in doing that, something changes. By, as I said, by being willing to be with our suffering, we find a way out of suffering. And that's that the meditation, the Tibetan meditation of Tonglen, is the breathing in the suffering of the world and breathing out compassion. It's like as in the meditation we did, that the heart becomes like a fire to burn and purify, if you like, the sorrow and the suffering, and to breathe it out as compassion. So we turn suffering into love and compassion. So in being willing to open to our own suffering, we build the strength and the capacity to be with the suffering of others. It's really, we can't open to the suffering of the world if we're closed to our own suffering. It's a direct channel. You know, the closing down here necessarily is a closing down towards others. You know, or if it comes out, in a distorted kind of way, where it's partly closed off and then has to kind of squeeze through, but then is likely to manifest in more distorted ways as pity, as grief, as in some form of separation from others. This is how Christina Feldman, in this book, Compassion, a lovely book. She's been teaching for probably over 30, 35 years, and wonderful teacher. She says, the psychology of compassion relies upon you seeing what is human, seeing yourself in all your enemies. The person you hate or feel the most bitter toward is, in the beginning and the end, someone who wakes in the morning wanting to be safe and free from pain. Someone who is healed by a loving touch. Who longs for tenderness and understanding. Only when you see yourself reflected in the eyes and heart of another can you understand that to harm another is to harm yourself. As Gandhi once said, where there is hate and fear, we lose the way of our spirit. Where there is hate and fear, we lose the way of our spirit. Longfellow, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, put it like this: if we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should see see sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should see sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility. So if we really could see into the heart of another person, even the person we might think of as the worst person in the world, you might think of, you know, politicians that you might have a difficulty with, you know, and think of, you know, it's so easy to kind of see them as not as human beings, but as this embodiment of these views and beliefs often that you really dislike or disagree with. And so we create this sense of distance and separation. And in that separation, there's all the room in the world for hate to come up, or for distance to come up, for anger, and all these very difficult and afflictive emotions. But if we can just touch into the fact that this person wants to be happy, they want to be free of suffering, they want to be cared for and loved like everybody else. We don't have to agree with what they say or agree with what they do, but then we can then, though, begin to connect with them and to break down the sense of separation, the sense of distance. In order to hate, we have to have distance, don't we? If somebody is close and we can really see them and connect with them, we can't harm them. You know, we have to somehow turn them into the other before we can harm them. We have to make them into the other. We have to put that distance, that separation there. So it's essential that we break down, that we cultivate the ways of breaking down the sense of distance and separation, that we open our own hearts, that we connect with others as no different from ourselves. Then, when the distance and the separation falls away, then how can we harm another? What naturally arises is love, kindness, compassion, connection. So compassion is a natural response to suffering when we don't go to our defense mechanisms. Grief is when we're overwhelmed by suffering, our own suffering or another's, when we don't have the wisdom or the equanimity to hold the pain that we're given. And pity is when we separate ourselves from suffering, our own suffering or others' suffering, because we don't want to or can't fully open to it. So, in order for us to be able to open to the suffering of another or of ourselves, one of the other qualities, one of the other Brahma Viharas plays a really important role, and that is equanimity. Equanimity is the quality that allows us to open to and be with suffering. Equanimity really gives us the courage to open compassionately to the suffering of another. Because without equanimity, we will easily go to being overwhelmed. You know, being opening, but feeling this is too much. If I let more of this in, well, I'll just be swamped by it. I won't be able to hold it. You know, I'll be overwhelmed by grief and by sorrow. And probably all of us at one time or another have felt that. That to let in the suffering of others, to open to a suffering, maybe of an individual, maybe of people far away, that to do that would be just overwhelming. So we have to be in a place of balance, of equanimity, in order to allow ourselves to open, to have the courage to open to the suffering of another or the suffering of ourselves. And I'll be speaking in a couple of 2 weeks about this quality of equanimity. So compassion is a quality of kindness, loving kindness, the open heart, the awakened heart, meeting and engaging with the suffering of ourselves, the suffering of others, the suffering of the world. It can manifest as the wish to help others, to engage with others, to engage in the world. One of the a very beautiful manifestation of this quality of compassion taking a really active form is in the Bodhisattva vow, that is the vow in the Buddhist tradition to a bodhisattva is an awakened being who, you know, has done everything necessary to be free of the realm of suffering, but chooses to stay in the realm of samsara, the realm of suffering, until all beings are liberated. So it's a commitment, really, to engage actively with the suffering of the world. You know, it can manifest as, you know, I won't end my stay in this realm of suffering until I've helped free all beings. And it can sound grandiose, but it's not, the intention isn't grandiosity. I'm going to free all beings. The vows, it takes various forms, but it has a real beauty to it in terms of really manifesting the compassion actively in the world. This is one expression of the bodhisattva vow. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to liberate them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transcend them. Dharma teachings are boundless. I vow to master them. The Buddha's enlightened way is unsurpassable. I vow to embody it. So sometimes people can react to the bodhisattva vow, wow, you know, this is kind of this, you know, be able to, you know, master all of the Buddha's teachings and save all sentient beings. But it, for me, it really, and for those who are taking this vow, I think, really manifests as a wish to serve other beings, to serve humanity, to serve life, to do everything we can to ease suffering, our own and the suffering of others, and to really manifest that in the world. And many, many expressions this can take. But I'll pause here for this evening. Next week, I'll say a few more words about compassion, but then look into the third of these Brahma Viharas, the quality of appreciative joy or sympathetic joy. This is kind of turning it around, and when the loving heart, the awakened heart, loving kindness, if you like, meets the happiness of another, and what the natural expression of that is joy in the happiness of another. So it's called sympathetic joy or appreciative joy, mudita in the Pali language. And we speak about this next time. So just a word about the at-home practices. What I've on the sheet, we'll send this out so you'll have the links actively, live links. We'll send them out today or tomorrow, tonight or tomorrow. And the number of readings, they're not very long. A chapter in Sharon Salzberg's book, a couple of the readings about the rats, the study of the rats, and another short article on compassion. And then there's a number of talks. There's hundreds of talks on compassion on the Dharma Seed and other websites. I've just pulled out a few, and you might check one or more of these that may speak to you. Also a few guided compassion meditations, either one in Jack Kornfield's book, The Art of Forgiveness, Loving Kindness and Peace. There's also some guided meditations from different teachers you might listen to and see if they speak to you. And then for practices, what I'm inviting you to do is to continue with the practice of loving kindness towards yourself, you know, just practicing, you know, both as a formal practice in meditation, but also at different times during the day, just coming back to, may I be happy, may I be peaceful, may I be filled with loving kindness. And also you might practice this week working with a difficult person in your life. You know, somebody who's not extremely difficult, but somebody, you know, beginning in a kind of more moderately, mild to moderate difficulty, so that you work up to the most difficult people in your life and kind of let the heart open gradually in this practice. And you might also explore some of the compassion practices that are very much related, you know, opening with compassion to ourselves and to others. So thank you for your practice and attention and kindness this evening, and have a great rest of the evening and a great week ahead, and I'll see you next week. Namaste.